Good evening, everybody. This is John Adolfi. Welcome to our March monthly event. It is St. Paddy's Day, March 17th at, 7 p.m.? A little after 7 p.m. We just got done with our preliminaries, and tonight we're going to talk about the seven top investment property exit strategies, okay? Let me just go ahead and pass out the worksheet. Let me just go ahead and grab one. There you go. We're going to talk about what happens after you buy the house or the two-family or the commercial property. Typically, we're talking about a retail single-family house. And what do you do with it? Okay, let me, by a show of hands here tonight, how many have purchased an investment property, something other than their own property? How many have done it? Okay, how many have sold an investment property? You have. Okay. How many of you ever rented out an investment property? And how many of you have ever sold a property with some sort of creative financing? Okay. All right. So, we're going to talk about the seven top property investment exit strategies. Again, this is when you have purchased a house and now it's like, uh-oh, I'm going to be closing on this in the next 30 to 45 days. What am I going to do with it once I... Believe me, if you've never done this before, the listeners out there, if you've never bought a house before, I'm talking a house where you're going to do something with it other than your own home. When you all of a sudden either at the auction or I call you up on the phone and let you know that HUD just took your offer or some bank just took your offer, the first thing that will go through is a streak of fear. Uh-oh, what did I just do? I've felt it myself and I've sold, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of homes, and then all of a sudden I do my own and all of a sudden it's like, oh! I turned to my father-in-law at the courthouse steps and said, did we do the right thing? So it's natural to feel that way. Once it settles in that it's yours, okay, then it's time to roll up your sleeves and start focusing on what your end result is going to be. What is going to be your exit strategy? Is it going to be, and we'll talk about the different, is it going to be to rent it or to sell it, flip it, wholesale it, lease option? There's a number of strategies to do this. We're going to go over one by one and talk briefly about each one. So, the first one is the retail flip. And what a retail flip is that you go into the house, you fix it up, and then you flip it. And flipping, for those of you who really don't know that much about real estate, flipping is just another word for that you're selling it to somebody else. Okay, that's what the word flip means. So, the pluses of doing a retail flip is you got a big chunk of cash coming towards you, hopefully with a profit at the end, and that check is nice. Some of you may not be used to getting a check, a surplus check, for $10,000 or $20,000 or even $30,000. And when your name is on a check for $30,000, that is one big payday. So that's what the alt is, and then you can do it again, and again, and again. In theory, the negative to wholesale flip is once you flip it and sell it, you're unemployed. You're unemployed now. Your money is not working for you. You just made a substantial, profit, but the money is only now, and it's great, but now what? What's the interest rate now in savings accounts or CDs?
Is there any?
It was okay. 1%, 0.7%, 0.5%? It's pretty pathetic, huh? Okay, so your money is immediately losing value or it's not doing anything. So that's one of the negatives to a wholesale flip, if you want to call it that. But it does give you working capital to do something else. It can leverage you to something more, and that's what's really cool. The other problem, what we've been experiencing, is that the climate may not be good to do a flip. And Andy and I were talking about this before this evening's event. He was the one who brought it up in conversation, actually. He recognized that this climate is not that great, and it's true. It isn't that great. Now, I am the internal optimist, but unfortunately, what's happened, let me explain what's happened. After 2009, okay, the foreclosures, bank-owned, government-owned properties, dried up. And the reason why it dried up in New York State is because there was this thing called robo-signing that we heard about in the media. We heard about people being taken advantage of. that is those who are going into foreclosure. The banks were very, very uncooperative, didn't seem to either have the will or the systems in place to be able to, in a systematic way, help the homeowner through the struggle when they get behind one, two, and then three payments. And I say three payments with emphasis because after the third payment, that's when the foreclosure begins. Technically, they can start the foreclosure after the 31st day, but they wait until the 91st day. So what they did finally, after the government pressured them, is to set up systems in place to prevent these things that were happening, people being foreclosed on in a, I guess, an unintegritous way. I don't know how to describe it any more other than that. And what they did was let me just tell you in a nutshell, it slowed the foreclosure process down in New York to almost a complete standstill, to where they were saying, and I read this in the newspaper a few years back, that if they stopped the flow of foreclosures right this very second, nobody else in New York State got a foreclosure and no other properties were being repossessed, it would take, with the current system on how they're spitting them out to the marketplace, it would take 57 years to liquidate all of the inventory. Florida, 3 years. New Jersey, 53 years. So in the Northeast here, we have a bottleneck. And that bottleneck has not been released, meaning that surplus of properties. And to prove that, in one way, is to just look around in your neighborhoods and drive, and you will see more abandoned, vacant houses than you have ever before seen since the early mid-2000s, ever. You would see maybe one. Because they would foreclose them in a year to a year and a half. And then they would spit it out and get it out into the market. And they slowed it down to where it was taking now 2 years to 4 years or more. Okay? What that has done for the retail flip abilities since 2010 is that it's reduced the amount of inventory into the public's ability to buy. And as a result of that, it's made properties a little bit more scarce. And as a result of that, it's driven the prices up just a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean anyone here who's thinking about selling their home, that's driven their property price up. But what it's done is it's driven the property price up for foreclosures, government-owned, bank-owned properties. That's what's happened. In 2009, I sold one fella 19 HUD homes in 2009. HUD, just HUD. And he's got an extremely sharp pencil. Seriously, this guy knows what he's doing. 19. I don't think I've sold him more than just a half a dozen in the last 4 years. But it's about to change. Over the last 5 months, they've released more HUD homes. I always use that as my temperature gauge. More HUD homes in Onondaga, Oswego, Oneida, a couple in Madison, Auburn, a little bit in Cayuga, Auburn, than I've ever seen before. So there's hope. So, if retail flipping is a hit and miss proposition, by the way, you can still retail flip, you just got to be real careful. And Andy and I were talking about the fact that you've got to make sure that your margins are acceptable. What does that mean? That means that the acquisition price, let's say you buy it for 50, okay, and it really was worth 70 and it's as is condition, and then you put 10 in and it doesn't make it worth 80, it makes it worth 90 now, okay? That spread between what you paid for it, what you put into it, your holding costs, including any loan monies, including taxes, insurance, whatnot, it's got to be there in order to be able to do a retail flip, because you're going to either have to use real estate or do it on your own if you can do that. Let me tell you what you're hoping to walk away with. You're hoping to walk away with no less than $10,000. Minimally, my father-in-law and I, the nine that we have done, the least we ever made to split between the two of us was $19,000. Okay, after all the holding costs. The most we've ever done was $40,000, okay? And we split it between the two of us because we both put the effort into it, and we put our our man hours in it, so to speak.
John, when you do it, do you have a timeline? Usually 6 months.
Oh, timeline. Let's talk about that. Our timeline was not... There's professionals out there that have a team of people that go in and knock them out in 6 weeks. Okay? We took 6 months to a year. Because I'm working a full-time job, he's working a full-time job, and then we go and we work 2 to 3 hours in the evening, mm-hmm. every evening, a few hours on the weekends, you know? And I remember one time I had put 500 man hours into one house.
Wow.
And he put 500 man hours in too. And that's not including my wife and my mother-in-law. So it can get pretty time intensive. And then when you get laborers, what are you going to pay them? $15 an hour? You're going to get $15 an hour looking stuff. You know? So you got to, what, $20 an hour? Is that when you can start to get somebody decent, $25 an hour?
Exactly.
You know, so... So retail flipping is tenuous. If you do the work yourself, you have a better chance of making the profit because of your own sweat equity. Now, let's talk about wholesale flip. Wholesale flip, you've got to either, number one, be willing to take less on the sale, or you got to really get a screaming, screaming great deal so that you can wholesale flip. Wholesale flip means this. Let me give you an example. You buy the property for $40. It's worth $60 in its as-is condition. You sell it for $40. It's worth $60 in its as-is condition, and you flip it to somebody before you roll up your sleeves and get to work for like $50. You make a quick $10. They have $10,000 equity themselves. They put $5 to $10 into it. They generate another say $10,000 equity, and they sell it and make a profit. That's
do those generally go to another flipper?
Yes.
Wholesale.
Yes. They can also go to a wholesale flip. The question is, can a wholesale flip go to another flipper? And the answer is yes. It can also go to a dad who wants to buy a house for their son and daughter. We did that one time. We bought a house on Omara Drive, which is off of Orange Point Road or something over there in Brewerton. And we rolled up our sleeves and we started cleaning it out. And we got to a certain level of clean out and tear out. And the dad came in and he bought it for $30,000 over what we had into it. But it was still a good deal for them. So we wholesale flipped it to the dad who was getting it for his children. So it doesn't matter. I don't care who I sell it to, you know, but that's a great question. So what's the plus for wholesale flip? You get to do it quickly so that you can do it again. And so it's just a fast outlay of money. It's a quick get in and out, and that's really cool. The negative is that you may not be able to get it low enough in price to be able to realistically do this. But let me ask you this. Would it be cool if you had 500 man hours worth of work that you had to do to a house? Okay, just 500, not 1,000, not 1,500 like we did on one. 500. And you bought it for 50, and you could pull 5 out within 2 weeks. Would that be good enough? I'm just saying.
As
opposed to getting $20,000 after 500 man hours of work. I'm just saying. If you're desperate for the money, and I don't mean to put it that way, but if the money is going to mean more important to you than the time, and you're willing to put the time in, then by all means make your $20,000. But if you can quick flip.
Another real good point there, not to interrupt. Is,
no, go right ahead.
Especially on an older house, you start ripping and tearing, you don't know what you're going to find.
It's absolutely right. The age of the house really does have something to do with your evaluation of what you're going to do or not do. I haven't even thought about that. I'm glad you brought that up, Bart, because the when you got an older home or a property that has an extensive amount of work that needs to be done to it, especially an older home, as soon as you start tearing it apart, now you're asking yourself, hey, am I going to tear out the lath and plaster? We're going to do the whole house now? What other? And everything is like askew. You know, nothing is nothing is square. So now you got to go in there like a craftsman and re-put it back together in a way that is going to make sense. There's no straight corners and stuff. So yeah, that's a good point. Let's talk about one that's not on here. This is a bonus one for you. And that is assigning the contract. I just had a client just the other day. I'll give you stats. I won't tell you who it was or where this was done. Okay? He was able to identify a property, brought it to me. I didn't even bring it to him. He brought it to me. Many times that happens. I'm not omniscient. I don't know every deal out there, right? It was on the market, I don't know, 45, 50. I'm not sure what it, I can't remember what it was on the market for. It was beat up. He was a right buy. He bought it for $25,000. And I just got word 3 days ago that he flipped it before the closing. So what you do is you make sure that when you're writing up the contract for $25,000, there's a stipulation in there that says that this contract can be assigned. And that's what he had me put in there. And what an assignment means that he's going to take that $25,000 contract, he's going to hand it to Mr. Smith, who's looking to buy a house. Mr. Smith, here is the $25,000 contract that I'm going to close on this. You close it instead of me. Thank you. Wow, you found me a great deal. How much is it going to cost me to assign or to take your contract away from you and still close on it for that price? And his price was $5,000. So the guy will pay $30,000 for a house that he normally wouldn't be able to have gotten himself for that. He'd have to have learned about it, knew how to negotiate it. And the guy gets $5,000 for showing up, identifying it, showing it up once, and then showing it to his client just recently. And then he just assigned it for $5,000.
Now that first purchaser had what? The $500 down for the contract?
That's right.
No mortgage?
No mortgage.
No taxes?
No, he was going to pay cash for it, put a $500 deposit down. And now this guy put a $500 deposit down, okay, that she collected. And he's going to, at closing, pay him $5,000. And he never has to come up with anything out of pocket. I'm talking about the first buyer here.
Or do anything.
You like that?
A lot.
Yeah. But he has the cash to do it. Okay, if he had to. Okay? That's your bonus. That's your bonus exit strategy. That's not even an exit strategy. That's exiting before even the show begins.
So when you're talking about these different strategies as far as the flips, et cetera, considering right now there's such a minimal amount of funds on the market.
Right.
The competition in this market, though, I mean, come on, money guys. I mean, I guess your name, you know, the Chuck Miles of the world.
Yeah.
Who are able to win there in cash at these places. What's left over for the average middle class schmucks like me?
Good question. Kevin asked a really great question, and the question was, you know, you've got these professionals out there that are all funded and everything, and they're experienced in everything. What about the average guy in the street? Is there any hope for you in order to be able to compete with this? The answer is yes. You've got to understand that even me as a realtor, I don't know every deal out there, and they don't either. Only the deals that either they discover on their own or their realtor brings to them. And there's plenty of stuff that's going on the market that's non-HUD that keeps them busy. But let me give you a little secret about HUD. Realtors hate them. Realtors ignore them. So as the HUDs increase, you guys and gals, truthfully, don't need to look at almost... I mean, people are going to say, oh, John, you're really limiting yourself here. No, I'm serious. There was a time where we had 100 to 300 HUDs a year in Onondaga County. HUDs, not bank foreclosures. There were 1,200 a year in Onondaga County at one time. And out of those, 1 to 300 were in Onondaga County. And that was every single year up until just recently. Yes?
Land bank
is doing tax foreclosures.
And they took over the HUD houses too.
Yeah. Yes. Land bank is the, and I don't know the relationship completely between the city and land bank, but all I know is that a land bank home, from my understanding, and I've sold to, they're taking the house back from the owner through tax foreclosure, and then the city is turning around and selling it through a couple of different realtors, and they're doing it through this thing called land bank. And the stipulations in order to buy are so restrictive and extremely extensive. You guys don't even want to go there. The prices, they're awesome.
Now it's tremendously easy. $4,000 for a two-family house.
Yeah.
But they demand everything you put in it. They want to know what you're putting
up front.
In, what you're doing.
That's right.
And how much you're going to put in it. Yeah. How much cash you got on hand.
Yeah.
And
they want to know your plan of everything. They want
you got 1 year to do it.
And you have to have them
1 year. So if you ain't got 30 or 40 thousand on hand,
right,
don't get involved with them, because that's what's going to cost you to fix some of those houses.
Listen to this. This true story. There was a house for sale, and somebody wanted to put a $20,000 offer. It was $20,000. He wanted to put a $15,000 offer on it, and so we did. And the guy who put $5,000 offer on, he won. And I'm thinking, oh, is there something dirty going on here? No, there wasn't. I just didn't understand at the time how land bank worked. Here's what happened. The guy with $5,000 said, I'm going to put 40 into it. The guy that put an offering for $15,000 said, I'm going to put 20 into it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So through them, you can't have any, if you own other properties, you could not have any codes or anything against you.
Isn't that interesting?
5 years.
No code violations for 5 years, Mike is saying.
5 years, you can have one code against you. So if you got a tenant and he blows you in for, like, saying a soccer, okay, and they go there and investigate it and was out, before you even know it, he didn't even have to notify you.
Yeah.
That's a code violation. You're going to get rid up for it.
That's it? Just get rid up for it?
You get rid up for it, but you won't be able to buy one of those houses.
So, just try
to... Yeah, I already learned all this. I ain't got no codes in any of my houses, but I'm just saying that I had to sign all these papers on me, and the demand, and the reason why I bailed out of it is because they told me I had to spend over $30,000 within that 1 year.
Fix it up, yeah.
Because I was going to work gradually, get one apartment done, rent it out, work with that money to fix the next one. Because it needed sinks, kitchens, bathrooms, walls, it needed everything. So I was going to put 20 into it to get the first one done. Okay. They said, nope, it's got to all be done within 1 year or we confiscate it. Right there.
Land bank.
Right.
Watch out.
I think they want to be proactive.
Yeah, you got to watch the contract. I got a couple of those. You know what? I should drop those contracts off. I have a few of them.
I've seen them because we've done two of them. Oh, yeah. We've done two land contracts. I don't do them anymore.
Yeah.
I don't do them anymore. Believe me, I don't like turning away business. I don't. Not because of the money, because I like serving in the way that I serve, in the capacity that I serve. So I feel like I believe that I'm servicing the client in the highest possible way. That's why I hate turning anybody loose. But with the land banks, I've done two. I won't do anymore. I can't. I don't want to. It's not even so much me. It's putting... Look, Mike has already shared his frustration, and I don't want to put anybody else through that. That's the reason why we don't, even if the prices are so incredible.
3 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, they told me within the month I can close, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when they kept throwing all these restrictions, and then you got to go through codes.
Yeah.
You have to get it all redone and everything. And then you give
it's easier to build a house.
Well, So the best way to do is, like, do it with HUD homes, because they're not that strict. They would like it fixed and whatever. But they're not as strict. And also, the anything you do with the city, they want every license this, license that. Like, you can't do it. So you got to pay these people to put new furnaces in, electricals in, and all that. You got to pay somebody that does those two things. Everything else you can do, roofs, whatever, you can do all that. But you can't do, and me, good enough on a roof, I ain't doing a roof, but I'm just giving you an idea. Okay? And it's very extensive. He's 100% right now.
Yeah.
100%.
Because I've been through it.
But with 4,000, I was going to gamble. But when they told me the restrictions on it, forget it.
Not a business free start.
Yeah, really blew my mind. It took me about 3 weeks to get my money back because I bailed out.
Rent. Some of you have rented your house before. What's the pluses for renting? I'll tell you something. Guys that wanted to flip, you know, felt like, oh, I really want to flip this, John, have just decided it's like, I guess I'm not going to. I got a call a few weeks back, and the guy said to me, hey, I'm getting $900 a month. I like this. So, you know, renting is not horrible exit strategy. It does. Here's the pluses. Fast exit strategy. You know, as soon as you close on that house, you're going to get in there and clean it up. And I'm a big believer in creating a really nice environment for the renter. There's two reasons. Number one, and they're really basically, one's a little bit self-centered, but nevertheless, less headaches for you. Higher quality tenant. Higher quality of living for the tenant. So there's a mixture of motives for it. But you don't have to put granite countertops in a rental. Okay? Do you get what I mean? If you're going to flip it, You may want to put granite countertops in. When you get ready to rent it, you may want to dress up what's there or put something in a little less expensive. I don't like going cheap with my rentals. I've got one upstairs right here right now that the carpet for three rooms is going to run me with the very best pad that money can buy, because I always believe in that, you know, $1,100. And, you know, for $300, I could probably get some indoor-outdoor carpeting and throw it up there without a pad underneath it. Yeah.
So you're going to throw no pad under it,
so
the indoor-outdoor.
Yeah, I'm going to get indoor-outdoor with the very best pad that I can buy.
I did that.
Yeah, I've seen people do it.
And
I know what you mean.
I did it myself. Yeah. They put it around the corner,
yeah.
And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
I am not going to throw that kind of money into a round property.
Yeah.
And I'm getting $700-$800 a month.
Yeah.
I still won't do it.
Yep.
Okay.
And everybody, you know, Mike was making a good point. Mike's saying that, you know, he wouldn't pay $1,100 for the carpet upstairs necessarily. He would do it himself and he'd do it in a less expensive way. And that's exactly what you guys can do. You can do what you, I work here. I've got tenants upstairs. I'm going to get the very best tenants in the world because I do not want the problems, and I want them to be so thrilled at the customer service experience, so to speak, of that rental that, you know, so anyway, there's a different philosophies in approaching this. As long as it works for you, and it works out in the end, and it's not too much of a headache, then
well,
awesome.
You rip it out. When the tenant moves out, you rip it out and put a new one. And
right.
And when they go to look at it, it's all new to them.
Right.
Okay? And you don't care about them destroying $105.
No, I get it. And
you understand what I mean?
Yep.
You're going to worry about a guy throwing $900 into a bedroom rug, and the guy moves out 7 months later, and it's destroyed.
No, I understand that rugs can get destroyed pretty quick.
Just, yeah, you got it.
Just going to have somebody who floats, okay? I'm going to have who floats. They don't even walk on the carpet.
Good luck.
So you get instant cash flow. The negatives, you maybe hate being a landlord. Okay, your money is tied up in the house. So one way is to buy a cheap house in a good area. Maybe a smaller house. Maybe a two-bedroom. And that's one way of not having as much money.
Two families or higher is the only way you're going to make money.
Well, you know, some people are buying a single family house, and now it's like, what do I do with it? And although if you're looking to cash flow, then as Mike is pointing out, a 2, 3, 4 family is the way to go. But if you're looking and you got this house and you're wondering what to do, and there's a hierarchy, you can go ahead and retail flip, and then if that doesn't work, you can rent it. And that's what some have done. Now, lease option. Let's talk about lease option. A lease option is a fancy word that says that you're going to rent it and you're going to give these people the ability or option to purchase it at some future point. The advantage to the buyer or slash renter is that it gives them some time to get their financial act together. Typically, that's the type of people that are attracted to lease options. Their credit isn't so good. And they need some time, but they want to buy something. They don't want to keep shoveling their money out for rent and not have anything to show for it. So some people do a lease option. Now, the pluses for a lease option for you as the investor or homeowner is that you get a down payment, some sort of down payment or an option. That's what another way of calling it. So you've got some return, okay? And the tenants are usually a little bit better than the average bear. They're going to buy this. They're going to treat it, at least in theory, as if they own it. Okay, there's that. Not all the time, but it's there. If it doesn't work out, you can evict them. You can evict them.
What happens with the down payment, though?
Ah, okay. If you have to evict them, then you may want to give that down payment back to them. If, though, after 1 year that they don't perform, and that's what the option agreement is, they have two options at that point. Leave without getting their option, their down payment back. Or they have to give you a little bit more money to extend it another year. And if they don't perform after the second year, you can extend it a third year if it's working out. And they just need a little more time with a little more money down. And then if they don't do something and they leave, you keep all the money. That's how that works. Okay?
So it's a down payment. It's not something where they pay every month.
Okay, let's. That's a great. Yeah, Mike is bringing up a good.
Goes toward,
right. let's talk about the price structure of a lease option. There's a couple of ways you can structure these. One is with the upfront money and just regular rent for the rest of that year, with none of that rent coming out of the price of the property or the property's sale price. So let's say you're selling it to them for $60,000. Rent is $600 a month, and you want a $5,000 upfront option agreement or option payment or down payment, so to speak. That $5,000 means that at the conclusion of that year, they are going to pay you $55,000. 60 minus the 5. And they're going to pay you $600 of rent a month. That's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is saying, I'm not going to charge you anything up front other than just a first month's rent and security deposit. And I'm going to charge you $800 a month. And $200 of that is going to be towards the price of the property. You can do it that way too. Let's say the fair market value for the rent is $600. You charge them $8. To charge them $600 and knock off $100 or $200, people have done that, but that's not really how you create an option that has a monetary value to it. Rent is rent. Option is in addition to. If you want to do it that way, they won't really realize how great of a guy or gal you are if you do it the other way. $600 for rent and knock off $100 a month.
I know some law you only got in Peter.
Yeah, sure.
His specialty.
Yeah.
And what he does is over, let's say, 3-year lease or whatever, that's going to equal 3% is what he's going to put away for them. So whatever he's charging a month, he's selling this for X amount of dollars. At the end of 3 years, here's your 3% saving us for you, so you can buy the house.
Yep.
So whatever it works out to be is what he does.
Sure.
So he says it's a very unregulated business still, this whole lease option.
Yeah.
I just think from renting whatever deals are going out really well.
He's got quite an operation. He's an expert in that field.
He is. For a long time.
Yes.
So that price is pretty much flat rate, no interest, no nothing.
That's what
they
find.
Yeah. Yes.
I believe you can keep that money too if they didn't neg on the payment of the house. If they don't accept the agreement, say you went 3 years with it, in 3 years you were collecting that $200 extra.
Okay.
I think you keep that money.
Yes, you do if they don't perform.
If they don't perform.
If they don't perform.
That's the same as the down payment.
No, down payment you got to get back. But that way you don't.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay, there's two different ways of doing it.
Oh, I see what you're saying, Mike. What Mike's saying is that if you collect the money at $200 a month versus an upfront charge, the judge may look at that differently if it goes before a judge. I don't have enough expertise in the area.
The contract's saying that they forfeit that money.
Right. But the contract's got to talk about forfeitures, so that's important so that they know. And let me just say this for the sake of the client and the client experience. Explain it to them. Know it well enough so you can explain it to them. Here's what happens when people enter into these kind of agreements. So they get at the end and they don't perform, and then there's this, I didn't understand it. And I think sometimes they really truly didn't understand it. So if you're going to explain it to them, explain to them what the negative is. Because if they came to me and said, John, I'm about to do a lease option with Gloria, and could you explain to me what this really means? And I would explain to them very, very clearly that if you don't perform, do you understand that you're going to forfeit this money? Okay, John, I get it. You know. So if you get to that point and you don't extend it, understand you will lose that money. Okay, good. I'm glad you know. So there's no surprise.
A notary public has signed it. Go to any bank or anything, a notary public has signed it that he agreed to the situation.
Okay. And Mike is just saying, have it notarized.
Have it notarized by a notary public. And then you're set. Because the courts will look at that saying, you did understand. They talked to you about it.
Right.
And
The negative is the money is tied up and you tenants might not buy.
Right.
Okay. So you do it all over again.
So it's pretty much the same as the owner holding the mortgage, pretty much.
We're going to get to that.
Oh, okay.
We're going to get to that. There's a kind of a progression here.
Okay.
Land contract is the next one. This kind of ups the ante a little bit on both ends. It's a different relationship. A land contract is an agreement that the buyer and the seller enter into. They are not. I call it a glorified lease option or glorified rental agreement. The buyers have equity in the house. Okay? So they have equitable title. What that means is if a land contract ever goes south, the judge, especially if they're Democrats, seriously, or if they lean in that direction of the consumer, they will say, hey, buddy, they entered into a land contract. They put $10,000 down. They've been paying you like a mortgage for the last, 5 years. And now all of a sudden they stop paying and you're going to kick them out and keep all their money? Not so fast. They have title. Equitable title means they have money title. They don't have title. Title never passes to them. Understand that a land contract, the title or the deed does not pass from Mr. Jones to Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, the buyer, just has a land contract in place. And the money that he puts into it could all be forfeited. It depends what judge, if this ever does go before a judge. Just be aware that if you do a land contract, that it could be subject to a judge favoring on the side of the buyer, especially if they have a bit of money involved. But typically, if they're going to perform or not, it's in the beginning stages. It's not 3 or 4 years from now. You know, unless something catastrophic takes place. And if it does, the one advantage that you have is you don't have to foreclose. Unless they take you before a judge and the judge says you're going to need to foreclose. Because they've got X amount of dollars in here and I'm recognizing that as equitable title. Okay? So, land contract, you don't have to foreclose unless you find out legally otherwise. They're challenging you. They bring you to court and the judge sides with them. Then there may be an amicable solution to this at that point before the judge, or you might have to do a foreclosure and that costs anywhere between $3,000 to $5,000. Yes?
I don't understand exactly how they have equity in the land contract. I really don't. Say they get the house, they sign the contract, and they have the house for, say, 2 years.
Yes.
So the equity is whatever they got from in 2 years.
You see, here's the point. The point is that with a lease option, you're renting it. You really basically have very little rights. And what the rights you do have in order to hold on to what you've got are written out and they're very specific. And there's really, you either perform, you don't. You either pay, you don't. But with a land contract, it's almost like a quasi-rental and almost a quasi-owner holding the mortgage type thing. It's I don't know how else to describe it. Maybe there's a better way of describing that. But the buyer has something in it. And usually it's more than a lease option, money-wise. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the instrument that they're entering into is a little bit more leaning towards the owner holding the mortgage. The way it looks, the way it acts. But it's still the title, the deed never passes hands. And we're going to get to that one next. But the pluses gives the buyer the impression they are purchasing, so they better take better care of it as another. You can get a larger down payment. If it fails in the payment, and the down pay, if it fails, keep the payments and the down payment, clean it up and do it over again. People do it all the time. Negatives, you may have to do a foreclosure if the purchasers do not perform. You might. Remember, we talked about that. Auction, we talked about auction, but we're going to save that one for last. Let's talk about owner holding the mortgage. Now, what I mean by that is this. Mr. Jones owns the house. Mr. Smith wants the house. Mr. Jones passes the deed to Mr. Smith. It is now in Mr. Smith's name. And Mr. Jones is going to be nothing more than the bank. That's an owner hold mortgage. So let me talk about the pluses and negatives, and then we'll get. What is an owner hold mortgage? What does it do? It's attractive to buyers. The lease option, the land contract, and the owner hold mortgage is attractive to buyers. My father passed, and I was able to purchase through the estate. I'll give you numbers and everything so you kind of get an idea of what we're talking about here. His townhouse in Clay. And because of the third split and everything else, I was able to acquire it for, I think it was $34,000, okay? And it was worth, is that what I bought it for? Yeah, I think it was. It was worth about 51. It was about the best offer. We got a couple of offers, and it was the best we could do, about 51. So I bought it for 30. I think it was about 34, 33. And I just cleaned Dad's stuff out of there, and I sold it to a young girl who really wanted to own her own home. I didn't do a lease option, do the land contract. I did an owner hold. She came and plopped down $12,000 in my hand. I sold it to her for $66,000. She put $12,000 in my hand, $14,000, and I held a mortgage of $52,000 at 8%. And she pays like clockwork. That was 3 years ago.
Like that mortgage for how long?
Did we do 30 years? I think we did 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin? Yeah.
No, I was just wondering the differences between a land contract and like an older hold mortgage. Because like when I did a land contract before on a HUD home I had when I was out in Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
And basically, I gave the next number of dollars down. It was the attorney. It's not an attorney stage where it's a title and sale there.
Yep.
It was a go. We did everything, and you still filed at the courthouse.
Yeah.
What's the distinction?
The only difference between the two is that the deed gets passed from you to them if you're selling it.
In the case of
a
land contract?
Yeah, with a land contract, the deed doesn't pass.
Okay.
So stays in your name.
More, do you need a quick claim? Is that what it is? Is that what you're saying?
No. You can give them a warranty deed, just like if they. All you're doing is substituting yourself for the bank.
Right.
So instead of the bank collecting the mortgage money, you're collecting it. Everything else is the same with the owner-hold mortgage. It's just a flat-out sale. Deed is passed. Warranty deed. You're giving them a warranty deed, just like you would, with a land contract. There isn't any of that.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question, though.
Yeah, I think so.
When it's paid off, you have the lien holder has to mail something to somebody.
Yeah. Release of lien. After it's paid off, the question Mike was bringing up, after the mortgage is paid off, like, for instance, me, with this girl who bought this my dad's condo, I will be, facilitating a release of lien so that the title is not clouded anymore with a mortgage and it's free and clear.
So if he has a land contract, then you would not do that.
That's correct. With a land contract, you would not.
File at the courthouse, and if it's
worth it. Yes, you can file your land contract at the courthouse. I believe you can, and I would. You don't ever want to not file.
We didn't go out there, and it was
okay.
Out there.
What happens, God forbid, that something happens to you when you pass away, you're the one that sold in the house.
Right.
So
she'd be making payments to my estate.
You estate too.
Yeah.
So they have to sign off on that house after it's paid off?
The estate would.
The estate.
Yeah. The estate would file a release of lien. Saying that the satisfaction of mortgage, excuse me.
Okay.
Satisfaction of mortgage.
If somebody down the line has got to give that person that bought the house a satisfied mortgage.
Absolutely.
It'll be on the thing.
Yeah, that's what happens sometimes with these HUD homes or other properties that you involve. All of a sudden they say, oh, the satisfaction of mortgage wasn't filed 2 owners ago. Did that happen to you, John? Yeah.
So how do you resolve that?
It's just a piece of paper. It's a piece of paper to resolve it. All you got to, and I'm not an attorney, but I'm just saying it's done all the time.
You don't want to get caught in any of that. That's all.
No. Now, I'm going to use this as an example. Okay. So she's been paying for 3 years, $385 a month. $385 a month. I don't have to pay the taxes. I don't have to pay the insurance. Nothing. The land contract, you got to figure out who's going to be paying the taxes.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Actually, legally, in a land contract, isn't the person who's selling it ultimately responsible for the taxes if they don't get it?
It's in their name, yes, absolutely. The person in a land contract is selling it. It's their responsibility to take care of the taxes. He can collect that amount from the buyer, sure, and will, and should, and does.
It was really simple. I mean, don't read into it. Everything was.
Yeah. There's a lot of fine points to this that you can learn as you go. If you become an expert at this, and this is what you want to do, as far as exactly how the taxes work and how you collect them and what, open up an escrow account or not or whatever. So
the tenant and the land contract, the buyer will pay the taxes.
Yes, the buyer will pay the taxes. In the way it's set up, you either have them pay it directly or he pays you and you pay it directly. It is your responsibility as the owner of the property, though, not the buyer who's living in your property in a land contract, to pay those taxes.
Okay, let me ask you another question.
Yeah.
like you put the out there, you're in the bank now.
Yes.
You're in the bank for that loan.
Yes.
If she ends up not paying her water taxes or her
yes, tax, good question.
City tax, the city's going to put a lien out on the house and sell it.
Now,
you're going to be out of the money.
Mike is asking a great question. What happens if the water isn't paid? What happens if the insurance lapses? What happens if the taxes aren't paid? As a responsible, I put that in quotes, a responsible mortgagee, it's not mortgagor, they're the mortgagor. As a mortgagee, as someone who's holding the mortgage, you should be checking every 6 months to make sure that the taxes are being paid. That's what you should be doing.
Don't some people just get I could be on this, but like out there, when I was in Ohio, you got a courtesy capping all this stuff. You literally got the water bill, the electric bill, you know you're being paid.
Oh, okay. I do know here. No, not here.
Okay.
So the water bill, you got to check on those things. But if the insurance lapses, you'll get a letter. Okay, because you're the mortgage holder. Okay.
Because you can still get sued. Maybe so the holder of that mortgage.
Has anybody got a calculator?
No.
Can you got a cell phone? I want you to multiply 36 times 385. I'm having them multiply 36 payments so far of this mortgage times $385. And I want to show you the magic of compound interest.
Oh, yeah.
385 times 36. She has paid me $13,860. Her mortgage was 52. You know what her mortgage is today?
Plus the 12 that she gave us.
Yes, plus the 12. The mortgage right now is about 51. That's why people that work at banks, that own banks, the Rothschilds, that's the reason why they got so wealthy. Because of compound interest. So, add it up. It was 13,000 plus 12,000.
25,860.
How much?
25,860.
Okay. And I've got 51,000. If she was to pay me off today, I'd get 51,000 back. Another 51,000. So that's $76,000 on something I sold her for 66.
3 years ago.
3 years ago. Do you see how powerful it is? Now, if you get a real sour person in there...
Do they charge a penalty if they prepay the mortgage?
No. Typically, nobody does.
Okay.
I've never really seen anyone that does. So, but I just wanted to give you a feel for the power of having your money working for you. That's incredible. You would think with interest rates at 3%, she would go and get a mortgage.
Yeah.
People don't.
They can't. Because her credit is bad.
Well, I think her credit is good now. I believe her credit is good. I know, but she doesn't. They don't.
Stupid.
No, you just get so used to something, and $385 is not a lot of money. And she loves it there. She put a new roof on, she put new carpeting throughout it. I mean, it's sharp. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how long does it take you to get the house back if she don't pay you? How many months does she don't have to pay you?
I don't know. If I was to do the foreclosure and to, you know, facilitate with somebody who's right on and who really does, I don't know how long it takes. I don't know. I'm going to guess and say a year. 6 months to a year? I don't know. I'm being optimistic.
But that's not like for a mortgage compared to a rent, you know.
Now, you got to understand, here's the thing. This is the showstopper for most people in their minds, especially if they want to sell a multifamily property and sell it for owner financing. They get freaked out by this. And this is what they do. John, I got a three-family house. I'm making $1,500 a month in rental, and you want me to sell it and bring in and get it, collect a mortgage for $400 a month? People are short-sighted when they look at it like that. That $400 a month, okay, over 30 years, do you realize what power that is? Renting it out is being the bank. Being your own bank is the most powerful way to make money. And that $1,100, you're leveraging yourself. You never even have to do anything again to that property, number one. You don't have to pay any tax. You collect a almost interest-only payment for the most part. For almost 15 years, you'll be collecting a majority of that payment as interest. So people get a little bit short-sighted on this. I just want to kind of put that out there.
And when you're carrying the mortgage, there's a situation where you can't collect the tax upon that mortgage and pay the tax.
Yeah, you can do that too, like just like the bank. Yeah, you can set up your own escrow account.
Because you're not a financial institution.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, I don't know how sophisticated you want to get, or I mean, you know, getting your software up and everything, so you're tracking all this stuff and everything, or doing it by pencil or whatever. But you can collect the equal monthly payments for the taxes and pay for it yourself. Sure, just like the bank does.
Yeah.
The only negative is the purchasers stop making payments, and or they stop paying their taxes or their insurance, and then the foreclosure to get it back is $3,000 to $5,000. But let me share with you a really more easier way of getting your house back. It's called keys for cash. Cash for keys. The banks do this. Hey, Bob. Sorry that you're, 8 years behind on your mortgage payment. Instead of me kicking you out, your family, your ugly kids, and your dumb dog, here's, I got an idea. No, you don't want to say that. You know those keys you got there? I'll tell you what, if you're out by the end of the month, and you save me and you the pains of a foreclosure, which will be on your record for at least 4 to 7 years, and stop you from ever buying a home again, why don't you just go ahead and deed the property back over to me? I'll give you $500 moving money, and we'll call it a day. And if the person is reasonable, and that seems like a bigger, better deal than the other, that's a way of getting them out quickly. Yeah.
That foreclosure I bought from Dave Wynn last year.
Yes.
That's what it was, owned by a hedge fund, of all things. And their lawyer went over there, knocked on the door, and they gave him $2,000 to get the whole house.
$2,000.
They were gone in another month. And they claimed that place was clean when I bought it. I mean,
maybe $500 is not enough, but if you did have to pay them the $2,000 versus the attorney $3,000 to $5,000,
and time,
that's the problem, because they're not paying you while all that process is going on. Taxes are accumulating. What's that, Mike?
Could take months.
Yeah, could take.
It takes months. But I was just wondering how long before you can even file for that. And I wasn't sure what it was. I thought it was three, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
It's just like the banks or anything else. Or
that's right.
3 years on your taxes on your houses. The state can take your house if you don't pay in 3 years.
That's right.
Okay, and then you're out of money, they're out of money.
That's a good point. Mike is saying that you got to watch out, because 3 years is the time frame that they will take the house back. Yeah. And you want to at least know about that if you're going to want to do something about it. Now let's talk about our last one, and that's auction. We talked a little bit about that earlier before we recorded this class. The pluses of an auction: fast sale, one day, cash or financing. They're going to give it to you within 30 days or so, 30 to 60 days. You're done. Negatives: you might be holding the bag at 10% plus marketing fee if it does not sell high enough. And what we were saying earlier, Mike was pointing this out too, if you have a house that is worth 50 and you've had it on the market for 70 and had not any luck selling it at 70, so you got it on, it's worth at least 50, and you put it on the auction block and you're only able to get 20, because again, the cheapest people in the world go to auctions. Be among those cheap people, please. I encourage you. But
a house for $15,000 and I sold
that house for $52,000. What's that, Gloria? You bought something for $15,000 at auction?
Yeah.
And you sold it for how much?
$52,000. But I was, the whole thing with the house was, when I get into the house, I look at the walls, kind of scary. But you know what happened?
What's that?
Many wallpaper.
Yep.
In the
house.
Yes. I ripped out the wallpaper, paint the house.
How's it look? Ah, she did cosmetics to the house and flipped it. Ta-da! That's great.
With hot houses, I had, when I was married, hot houses. One I bought for $8,000, I sold it for $25,000.
Ah, okay. So, $8,000 purchase a HUD home and sold it for $25,000. It's a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. After I rent it out for some time, then.
Well, that's even great. Then you rent it out between the purchase and the sale.
Exactly.
It maximizes your final bottom line after everything is said and done. So the negatives, okay, we walked out. So, all right. That's your exit strategies. Have any others that we have not touched on? Any ones that I don't know. You can donate it if you want to.
So the lease option is a
rent to own. Yeah, lease option is a rent to own. A lot of people, when they call my office, say, hey, do you have any rent to own? And they mean lease option. It's just a little bit more of a legal term, you know. But yeah.
What are the pros and cons of buying a house, let's say, in another state?
What are the pros and cons of buying a house in another state? Management is the biggest concern. Look, you can get somebody who will be happy to take your money and fix it up, okay? But once you get it fixed up and looking good, it's the management, it's the distance, it's having a proper property, a good property manager. Some states, they specialize in that, like Florida and Georgia, and there's other states too where it's like hugely popular to buy a house and be not anywhere near the property and just rent it out. Here in New York State, in Syracuse and everything, this property management is terrible. All I hear is bad stories of bad property managers. That's another story for another night, but I'm just saying, though, that's the key, is proper management if you're going to be buying a house outside New York State. All right.
Some parts of New York State, you can only buy a house, but you can't buy it unless you're turning like 70 miles or 60 miles away from the house.
Yeah.